helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichart, National Director of CMDA Campus Ministries.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichart, National Director for our Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. And I've got some special guests with me. I've got Jerry Langan. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi.
And Dr. Peter Huntress. Welcome, Peter.
How's it going, Bill?
Well, I am going to forego the formal kind of recitation of biographies because I think some of the biography is going to show up as we have this conversation together, because Peter and Jerry are going to have a chance to kind of share their journey a little bit. I want to be able to have this as a conversation between something that we've never done on this podcast before, and that is have a physician and their patient, and to be able to talk about their journey together through this, through the diagnosis and treatment, and of what Jerry's about to share, as well as just how faith has informed this whole relationship and experience and encounter. So with that in mind, I'd like to start with you, Jerry. Tell us a little bit about your journey. You moved from Tennessee to Colorado. What led to that decision? And then what happened soon after you planted yourself in Denver, Colorado?
We actually moved from North Carolina to Colorado. So my husband was in the military. We were stationed in North Carolina, and that's where I'm born and bred, and that's where I'm from. And I've always lived at sea level. And when my husband came home and said that he felt led to go to Colorado, we had a choice of going to Colorado or Florida. We were told by God that Jason felt like he was called to Colorado. At the time, I was like six months postpartum, and I was not feeling led to Colorado, away from our family and our friends. But I trusted my husband, and so we moved to Colorado. We were there for, I think, 10 months in total, but I was, I flew in and my husband drove in, and we moved our 6-month-old babies to Colorado, and we didn't know anybody, and I was, you know, postpartum, and I was having all of these like really intense symptoms, and I guess, you know, being a first-time mom, like, this is the first time I've done this. I didn't know what was normal and what wasn't normal. And also always living at sea level and moving to really high altitude, I had no idea what altitude sickness was like. So it was just like a storm of epic proportions. All of the things that just added up, and in isolation, everything made sense. I was like very tired. I was, you know, sleeping a lot. I had a racing heart. I was gaining weight, but like all of those things are easily explained when you look at it in the scope of being a postpartum mom who hadn't worked out in, you know, over a year. And so when I was living there, I started noticing that like all of these things were like pretty exacerbated, and I was having a lot of, I don't know, I was having a lot of symptoms that I was excusing away. And then my husband was gone for 6 months, and I really started noticing the weight gain. And I am not a very big person. I like to say that I'm 5'3", but I've got like 5'10" energy. So I'm not like, I'm pretty small. And so like any amount of weight was really noticeable. And I realized that like I was gaining weight pretty rapidly, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. Like, this has to be the answer. And all of those symptoms also made sense in the scope of being pregnant again. So I said to my husband, like, I think I'm pregnant. And he said, no, let's hope that you're not pregnant. Like, I really hope that you're not pregnant. And I took a bunch of pregnancy tests, and they were all negative. And I flew back from Colorado to North Carolina, and we were home for a wedding. And my dad was like, your legs are really swollen. And I remember looking down and being like, wow, they're like gigantic. Like, they were the size of my thighs. Like, my ankles were the size of my thighs. And I just thought, I failed nursing school, but even I know that that's not a good thing. So I made an appointment with my doctor. And when we flew back to Colorado, I saw my doctor. And she knew that something was wrong. So she ran blood work. And before we were even able to get the blood work back, I ended up in the ER. I woke up the next morning with so much swelling, I could barely stand. And so I drove myself to the ER, and I went in and I told my husband I'd be home in, you know, a couple hours. I was not home in a couple of hours. And I actually was diagnosed with heart failure, and they were trying to find the root cause of the heart failure. And we were very lucky because we were in Colorado Springs, and Colorado Springs' hospital that I was at is a sister hospital to H's hospital in Denver. And after diagnosis with mild pulmonary hypertension and mild congestive heart failure, they sent me home after, I don't know, probably like 10 days. And I ended up being told I needed to get a referral to a specialist in Denver. And I got an appointment with a new doctor in Denver. And I remember thinking, I don't want the new guy. Like, I want the guy. I don't want the new guy. New guy happened to have been H. So it was very funny. So I remember, and like, you know, I've told this story before, but like, I remember driving to the appointment that day and just thinking, like, I am so nervous. Like, I'm nervous. I'm scared. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I hope this guy has something for me. And I was just like, well, I mean, we'll just see what happens. And so I got there, and I don't know if H remembers all of the things that happened, but like, we chatted, we went through like an entire list of like medical things. And at the very end, it said like religious preference. And I said, I'm a Christian. And he was like, oh, cool, me too. And I just remember thinking, that was weird. That was a weird conversation. And, you know, we chatted about other stuff. And he said, you know, I think you need to come in. We need to run our own tests. And I was like, okay. And we got done. And he was like, can I pray for you? And I remember being like, I guess. But also, like, that had never happened before. Like, I'd never had a doctor that had prayed for me. So, like, it was very, I don't know, like, it wasn't that it was uncomfortable. It was just like, I was surprised. And so I said yes. And he prayed for me. And I remember, like, I think I teared up, and he prayed for like healing and for understanding and for peace and all of those wisdom things. And I remember getting in the car and driving home, because it was an hour drive back to Colorado Springs. And I remember just driving and thinking, wow, like, I really felt God speaking to me. Like, I really felt like that was the moment that like God was like, I have not left you, and there is something here. And I don't know how far you want me to go into this story.
Let's just say this. You haven't gotten the diagnosis yet. Let's put a pin in this part of the story, and Peter, invite you to kind of share your journey. You grew up in a Christian family. Tell us how you landed on medicine. I know you got great training at Wright State. You were at you did your residency at Loyola and did a fellowship, I believe, at Northwestern. So a lot's going on in preparation to get you here. But tell us a little bit about kind of how you sense God's calling and why medicine.
Yeah, so I knew coming out of high school that I wanted to help take care of people and be around and serve in that capacity. And when I first entered college, I was torn between the idea of ministry versus medicine. And the more time I spent shadowing and talking to people on both sides and spending time in prayer and talking to mentors and family, Stacy wasn't quite in the picture at that point. So she wasn't there to have an opinion, although she probably would have had one. And just going through that process, it felt like all the things that I loved about ministry, I could still do through medicine, both through my day-to-day job, but also through the local church. And so it's a lot easier to wake up going through the process of I did all of my prereqs for med school and then decided to go to ministry versus going the other way around. So I had already completed all the things I needed to and applied and got into medical school at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, where I was so pleasantly surprised with how many Christian friends God provided us in that situation, an opportunity to get into CMDA as a first year medical student and spend a lot of time there. And we can talk about that another day as far as a story, but through CMDA, both local chapter and getting involved in more regional and national things, had the opportunity to go through what was then called Saline Solutions, and I think still called Grace Prescriptions.
It's gone through several iterations. Faith RX is another one of late.
Sure. Yeah.
Stay with us. More Student Pulse podcast in just a moment.
What happens after you finish those academic years and get into your clinical years and you realize that the physical healing that you're providing is really only temporary? You know, the first time that I sat down and I actually offered to pray with a patient, and amazingly they said yes, when I actually sat down to pray with them, I didn't know what to say. And I was kind of scared to begin with because I thought I needed some lofty words to reach to heaven, when in all actuality, that patient just really needed me to sit with him and to hold his hand and to really just bring his needs before the great physician. Prayer is a therapeutic intervention, and it is just as important as that prescription that you write, the referral to surgery, or any therapy that you send a patient to.
Whatever version we're on now, I had the opportunity of doing that as a medical student with my classmates and friends, and learning about how important it is to create ways to connect with patients and even colleagues about faith, and how that can be done in a conversational and a respectful way, and how it's so important to not leave that at the door, especially when you're dealing with situations of life-threatening illness or major diagnoses and life change. And as a pulmonary critical care doc, whether I'm in the ICU or I'm in clinic dealing with pulmonary hypertension and meeting patients like Jerry, those are, or can be, devastating conversations for patients and families. And as crazy as that sounds, that was another part during residency, as I kind of went through the process of figuring out what I wanted to do or what I felt like I was supposed to do with my life, that God was kind of leading me into those things and saying, I am giving you a gifting, or you're having the ability to connect with patients and families in this way, and you need to steward that opportunity. Because in some circumstances, you could be potentially the last Christian that somebody gets a chance to encounter. And so wanting to figure out how to do that well, and wanting to have a lot of time to practice that. So taking those tips, pointers, however you want to talk it, the teachings from Saline Solution, Faith RX, Grace Prescriptions, and trying to apply them at an early time and phase, and just really establishing those as a part of a normal pattern of how I interact with patients. And so that's always been there, and it's been a thing that's grown, and it ebbs and flows over time, you know, just because of who you're interacting with or how many students or residents or things that are around in certain situations. But it's always been an important aspect of who I am as a doctor and how I interact with my patients. And so, as Jerry said, it's on the list of what I talk about from the first conversation, and trying to engage with somebody on that level and know where they are and what's going on and how that may inform conversations going forward, and trying to find opportunities where there seems like a time that we can include God in the conversation as far as prayer or other support issues or things like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good that Jerry is sharing her story too as the patient, because, you know, one could think, well, it's just simply, Peter, you praying for a patient seems like a simple enough thing. Yet, the way I heard you talk about it, Jerry, this was like, whoa, this is something you had never probably experienced, a doctor initiating prayer. That was new, right? That you'd never experienced that before, had you?
Absolutely. Definitely had never experienced that before.
Well, so you walk away from that. Why don't we go to the diagnosis? How long did it take? You were working with Peter on probably, you know, trying to hone in and understand what's going on. Where did you eventually land in terms of your diagnosis?
Our timeline was very rushed because my husband was in the military. So after this conversation, H suggested that I self-admit and so that we could run tests. And the idea at the time was that I would be there for, 24 to 48 hours and it would be fine and we would do it and it would be done. Well, it ended up actually not being that long. It actually ended up being close to 2 weeks. And I asked every day when I got to go home, but I was diagnosed in the hospital with severe pulmonary hypertension, severe congestive heart failure. And I was actually there for 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks later, we moved to a different state. So it was very quick. But the 2 weeks in the hospital was very, emotionally and physically draining. I had a bunch of tests done. And after the testing was done, I had a different doctor come in and tell me that I was in very severe heart failure and very severe pulmonary hypertension, and that if I didn't start treatment immediately, I was going to die. Those were the exact words that I got. And I remember calling all of my friends and, asking them to pray for me. Like, I was so devastated. I was also in the hospital by myself because my husband was home taking care of our infant twins at the time. And I just remember calling and them being like, "You have to come. It's really bad." And I was like sitting in the hospital room and I was just crying, and H came in with like an entire team. There's like, 10 people in the room, and he looks at me and he's like, "Why are you crying?" And I was like, "This guy just told me devastating news." And one, he looked horrified, but two, he was like, "We've got this. We're going to figure this out. Well, we're going to start you on treatment. And God's got this." And he was like, "Let me pray for you." And he prayed for me in front of everyone. And I do distinctly remember that. And I remember the look in the room where everybody was so confused about whether or not this was appropriate. And like, he held my hand, he prayed over me, and I immediately did feel better. And it was funny because like his colleagues were like, "Is this okay?" And people didn't know whether to like close their eyes, you know what I mean? And it was very funny in hindsight, I guess. But like at the time, it was a very pivotal moment.
Well, Peter, what was going through your mind when Jerry shared what news she got and how she got it? What were you thinking? It sounds like you were a little shocked.
Well, I know who she's talking about, and they're very well intentioned, but can be overly direct. And I think that's not necessarily a skill that everybody has as far as how to be able to communicate things in a way. And a lot of times you have to be able to read the room and know and have a relationship with the patient and family as far as how they are best going to receive what you're going to say. And so you have to be able to change your approach, adapt in the moment, but also adapt based on the patient and family, and focus on the things that are important and convey that in a way that they are hopefully going to receive well and understand. And it's always important to convey the truth. And I've never shied away from that. I have no problem being direct and sharing those things, but you need to be able to do it in a way that doesn't also take away all hope if there's still hope and opportunity, which there was at the time, because we hadn't, even gotten to the point of talking about treatment and therapy. The approach was a little bit different before I got there. And so I had to try and pull those things back, but at the same time, wanting to build on that relationship and those conversations and where we had previously had gotten to in our patient doctor relationship in clinic, and knowing that we shared the same faith background. This was clearly important and impactful to her before, and we had talked about that, and her being there by herself and seeing all that emotion. I mean, for me, the best thing in that moment is to try and go before the Lord and say, like, let's give this in your hands and remember that no matter what we see or where things are, you're working behind the scenes. You knew ahead of time that all these things were going to happen and brought us to this point. You're not going to leave us here.
Yeah, I think that's so important, that this is not some formulaic approach. You read the room too as you came in. Whether or not you thought you'd be praying with Jerry at that moment with those other attendings around you, you weren't probably had that predetermined, but you understood the moment, and you having that ready permission in a way to have that.
Yeah. And I think that's important again for everybody to remember. And I think Dr. Larimore does a great job in the saline solution, grace prescriptions, whatever we're calling it, of talking about earning the right. And then being able to do it with with the permission of the patient. And so already knowing that we had that relationship established, I was not worried about that aspect. And for me, again, when I walk in the room and I'm dealing with these situations, if it's something that I feel like God's calling me to, then, I'm not going to sheep away from the God that's directed my path all the way to this point. And I'm going to be obedient. I'm going to do what God's called me to do. And if I get some strange looks behind me, then fine. But they're all used to that now. And so it's not as big of a deal as far as those situations go. But again, it's an important part of our care as Christians who happen to be physicians to be able to engage and to be able to have the ability to go there with patients. Because it's silly to think that the patients that we're dealing with, whether they're sitting across from us on the exam table in an office or they're in an ICU or a regular hospital bed, that somebody's not facing or thinking about those thought processes or having those questions of where is God in this? What's going on? Is he seeing me? Is he hearing me? Are things bouncing off the ceiling? How am I going to deal with X, Y, and Z with my family? And you have no idea where somebody is on that process as they come into your room. All you can do is choose to engage with the situation that God's put before you and trust and know that if you're being obedient, that God's going to use that for his purpose and his glory on the other side. And I think one of the coolest things about what Jerry was saying earlier, I mean, like it's, we're what, 7 years now, right, Jerry, from some of those conversations, literally this month. And she can still to this day tell you exactly some of the words that I prayed for in those prayers. And while I would love to be able to say that those were eloquent or things that I spent a lot of time preparing and mulling over and adding in just great scripture verses, like I don't remember, like I, what she's saying sounds right as something that I could easily see myself praying. But in the moment, I was just trying to do my best to pray what I felt like God was wanting to speak over the room and the situation. But those were the exact words that she needed to hear. And I remember you shared that, Jerry, in one of your other testimonies once. And I just sat there and just was in awe of how amazing our God is, right? To be able to allow us to not only be in the same place at the same time and overlap in these situations to allow that to happen. As you said, I was brand new, just out of fellowship, just had moved. But as Bill knows and has been a part of this conversation, Denver had been on my heart for over a decade, right? Bill, you knew that, right? So like these were intentionalities of how amazing our God is to be able to create these opportunities to allow these things to happen. And the prayers and the desires that were placed in that conversation were things that he did and he gave. And that was exactly what Jerry and her family needed to be able to, like she said, see that God is in this and that he sees her and that he's there and he knows.
Well, Jerry, you've held on to these words. They were words of hope and life, and it, I'm sure it strengthened your faith in being able to be prayed for in that way. But this is yet a big test of your faith. How has your faith endured through this? Because you've just gotten the diagnosis, and we're just about to think through now a treatment plan, but. Tell us a little bit about your journey of faith and how it endured this crisis.
I would say I was really unsure of what God was trying to tell me at the time. I mean, in the moment, right? Like, I think hindsight is obviously 20/20. Looking back, I think at the time I really felt like God was really silent. Like, there was a lot of quietness in the hospital room that I was in, like being by myself, not having a doctor around, and just having to sit in those thoughts. I think I, at the time, felt like God was being really quiet. In hindsight, I look back and I remember these moments where H prayed for me. I remember moments where H prayed for me and Jason, he was there. And I just remember looking back and thinking, wow, God was not silent at all. He was very loud. I just wasn't hearing him properly, like we get in our heads and like we imagine that like all of these, spoken words from God have to actually come from God. But like, I do feel like he used H as like an instrument, and that was really cool to see. I think throughout the entire journey, right, like we are trusting God. We've trusted God to come to Colorado. I'm now incredibly ill. I've just had babies. I've just been told that I might not live to see my kids grow up. And I was devastated. It helped me rely heavily on godly community. I have given this testimony before, but my first phone call was to one of my best friends who was our pastor's wife, and they rallied around me. And I think that had I not built a foundation on Christian relationships, I would have been really alone in those moments. And I think that that was a really, you know, evident way that God was speaking loudly that I didn't hear, that he had been building me to this point in this, in these relationships with Christian women, to be able to say at the moment that something happened, to know who to call on and to know who could speak truth into me. And then to have H pray over me, it was just like a full circle moment, you know? But like Jason and I were devastated and I had to move, like we were leaving. And so I'm like, what is happening? Like, I'm literally learning from a fire hose. I'm learning new treatment. I'm learning about this diagnosis. I have no idea what this is. And now I have to leave. And I just remember thinking, is this it? Like, is this what you want from us? Like, is this literally what you're calling us to?
Parting gift.
I know. And I was like, do you remember telling me, you're like, can you just stay? And I was like, no, I can't just stay. Like, that's what I remember. And I remember thinking, like, if God is being quiet, like, this is the moment where there would be like a grand, you know, trumpet sound where God was like, you can stay, you know? And I just remember, like, at the time I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but we're trusting that we're making the right moves. And we followed through with those. And I mean, here we are 7 years later, right?
Stay with us. More Student Pulse podcast in just a moment. For decades, there has been an increasing global movement of the whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. In 2014, that's exactly what Dr. Jeff Amstutz set out to do through the development of the CMDA Dental Residency Plus program, a one-of-a-kind, gospel-centered training program that equips dental disciples for service around the world. Have missions made an impact on your life? Maybe you've sensed God's call, but aren't quite sure how to follow His call through your vocation of dentistry. If you'd like to advance your clinical skills with other like-minded, Christ-centered dentists, while learning how to integrate faith in your practice, while bringing compassionate dignity to marginalized and vulnerable populations, would you consider the CMDA Dental Residency Plus program? People just like you are being equipped to serve domestically or internationally through their ministry in dentistry. In fact, many who have directly participated in the PLUS program will be joining us at the Great Commission Dental Conference. This is the missional dental conference of the year. Join us September 12th and 13th. Registration is only $50 for students, as well as many other partial reimbursement opportunities. We'd love to see you there.
Kind of a neat part of the story. I don't know how deep into details we'll get to, but the God has, in His kindness, given you a wonderful physician in Florida to be now working with, but in concert with Peter. One of the podcasts that you had Dr. M and Dr. H on was a great representation of just that collegial work, the ways that you guys, those two docs, were able to work together and carry and provide that continuity of care.
Yes, M is fantastic. I love him. I do think that sometimes he is like unsure of where he fits in with this relationship with H. And it's not that he's doing anything wrong. I trust him with my life. And like, I would not be his patient if I did not trust him. But I think I trust him the most because he's humble. Like, I got a really bad report and I was devastated. Like, immediately I was like tearing up. And he was like, let's call H. He was like, can you call him right now? And I was like, sure, I guess. And he was like, if you call him, will he pick up? And I said, I hope so, because I was just talking to him. So I hope he picks up. And he did pick up. And I put him on speakerphone and they went over my numbers together. And H was like, it's okay. You're going to be fine. Like, we're going to figure it out. And it was a very cool, like, collaborating moment, but it was also a really big moment for me to trust that M is not arrogant. You know, like, he was able to say, like, I might not have all the answers, but like, if you need a second opinion, like, I'm happy to get those. And I'm humbling, you know, myself to step back and say, like, if there's another option, I'm happy to take that option. And so they have been great together. And we've gotten to hang out together, all three of us. So that's been really cool too.
Fantastic. Let me continue with your story, Jerry, some, and maybe speak to those who live with a chronic illness, maybe similar to yours, different, but chronic nevertheless. And they haven't experienced the kind of supportive doctor-patient relationship that, you know, we've been talking about here. What advice would you give them? Because it's what you have and what you've been able to experience is been a wonderful blessing, but not everyone gets the privilege of having that kind of relationship.
Yeah, I actually just spoke on a panel about this subject specifically. I do understand that my situation is not normal. I do understand that it is a very big privilege to be able to have relationships with both doctors the way that I do, and that most patients don't get that. What I encourage patients to do is to keep looking for doctors that they can get along with. Everybody has a different personality. Everybody might not get along the same way they would with somebody else. And so I always tell patients to get a second opinion, and I always tell patients to continue to look for a doctor that they feel comfortable with, because like, they are genuinely making decisions that impact my life and my family's life. And so to be with a doctor that you don't trust, or that doesn't know who you are, and like, doesn't know your husband's name, is wild to me, because you're making decisions on behalf of our entire family. Like, you're not just making decisions on behalf of me. And so I understand that my situation is very privileged, but I don't believe that my standard of care should be I don't think that it should be that it's this outstanding amount of care. I think that this should be the baseline. But I think doctor-patient relationships should look like mine, and that my relationship with my doctors should be everybody's baseline, and it should not be something that is extravagant. It should just be the standard. And so I do believe that if you can't find a doctor that you get along with, I just go find somebody else. I do have friends who are patients that have like searched for years for doctors and have found doctors who have relationships like this. And it's out there. It's just sometimes you have to look for it a little harder.
And I think that the thing to add to this that we've kind of skipped over is the reason that this was so necessary was because of what happened in between Jerry leaving Colorado and getting to Florida, which we don't really need to get into today. And so as she's talked about the importance of trust, in that short period of time, I think because of how amazing our nursing staff is at our clinic, number one, and number two, our connection because of faith issues and that genuine relationship that we were able to develop over those couple clinic visits and the 2+ weeks that she was in the hospital, really gave her that trust. And so when then she left and didn't have that, and there were some things that became obstacles that were quite concerning, she very much so, as she moved into this new position, even though our group had the utmost faith in Dr. M and the team at Mayo, she was still very reserved and saying, should I really trust this person? Because I just got burned a couple months ago, right? And so there was, out of necessity, that needed to happen to allow her to be able to develop that relationship going forward. And so that was something that we had to learn to play. Because again, once she started seeing another doctor, I'm not prescribing her meds. I'm here, and our team is here as a support to answer questions, to be available, to give guidance and thumbs up and pray, you know, all those types of things. But it's to try and be supportive and to help be another ear to say, like, yeah, what they're telling you is right. These things are appropriate, the way that they're thinking through it. Maybe we're communicating on a better or different level that is easier or more trustworthy for whatever reason right now, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't give M that same opportunity. And I think it really helped you as far as get there. And so that's the first thing that I'd kind of say about that. I think the other part that, you know, both myself and Jerry really wanted to communicate on this podcast is for those that are in training or those that are just getting out of training or for those that have been out of training for a long time, it's never too late to take extra time to want to go in and be super genuine with your patient and their family, right? And I think that's what should make the difference from a Christian doctor versus not, is that you are genuinely interested in that person, all of them, physical, mental, spiritual, all the things that go into it, right? And so if you're that way, yes, it will likely cause you to be late often as far as getting done with work and getting out of clinic or getting out of the hospital, but it's going to provide you opportunities to connect with patients on ways that a lot of other people can't, because it's purely going in and having the conversation and talking about the things that are related to the disease state and not necessarily taking the time, like Jerry said, to learn her family, to learn about her kids, to talk about what her goals are, or did she go on vacation, or what's happened. And it's, you know, it's more focused on, am I doing the right things, checking the boxes? Am I getting the stuff that I need for my note, for my understanding of the disease process that she's seeing me for? And then when do I schedule her to come back? And then I'm out. Right. And so it's taking that extra step and remembering that when you walk into the room, you have no idea where this person's coming from, and you need to be prepared for God to interrupt your day and to take that extra time to go through that process, because that's what allows you to have a fulfilling relationship in a doctor-patient relationship on both sides, for what Jerry and her family needed, but also for me, you know, years back, being able to look and go, wow, look at how cool it is to be a part of stories like this and to see the impact that God is using me to make on this community and these patients and these lives.
That's excellent.
And I do think that something... I do think that something else to tap into to back up what he just said was that, like, our faith-based relationship that, like, H established when I went in made me feel safe. And, like, that safety is what carried over to me trusting him when I was in a precarious situation where I was not safe. And for me to trust his opinion on a situation where it was life and death, he said, absolutely not. Like, that's not what I would do. And I trusted him because we had built a safe relationship, a relationship that was built on faith, but also carried over into, like, clinical practice, was that, like, he made me feel safe in both regards. And M and I don't talk about, like, faith the way H and I do, but, like, M has made me feel safe because he has asked H for different, you know, opinions. And, like, that has, he humbled himself. And it made me feel safe knowing that he was a good guy. Like, he was a good doctor, but he was also, like, a good guy. And so, like, they have both made me feel safe in trusting them to make decisions when I don't have all the facts. So that is probably the biggest part that I would say about clinical practice. And, like, if you are a resident, if you're a fellow, like, if you're figuring it out, making your patient feel safe, going the extra 2 minute mile could make it all the difference. And, like, all it took for H was a 1 minute prayer. And I was immediately on a different page because now I have trusted him a little bit more. And that patient doctor relationship has to do with a lot of trust.
Yeah, amen. Well, let's offer some closing remarks. I want to start with you, Jerry. Just maybe talk a little bit about your podcast. And why are you doing a podcast? Is this something that has helped you in your journey as you've been battling this chronic illness? Why a podcast?
I have no idea why a podcast. I'm doing a podcast because I was asked to do one. Here I am. I really just started. I started my page and all of that Instagram, social media stuff because when I was in the hospital, I was really lonely. And I was looking for somebody who I could relate with. And at the time of diagnosis 7 years ago, there weren't a lot of creators out there that were doing what I'm doing. And while I was in the hospital, H and his team connected me with a different patient. And she came to the hospital and met me. And what I tell everybody is that I started all of my social media, all of my advocacy because of this girl. Because she came in and she showed me that there was a life outside of the four walls of that hospital room. And I wanted to be that girl for someone. And so social media has kind of gone crazy and it's been really cool. It's been a really cool ride. A podcast is a way to keep the content out there. It's been beneficial because sometimes I feel like I'm really long-winded in my captions and I just can't do it all. I'm really long-winded anyway, and I like to talk. So I figured, why not? The podcast, people can just listen to me if they want to.
Very cool. Well, what's the name of the podcast?
The podcast is called Rarely Typical, and it's on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.
Okay, we're going to put a link in the show notes. Also, a link to two of the episodes. I think it was two, right? That you had Peter as a guest.
I think I've been on at least three.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know of two. We'll find the third. We'll post all that. So that could be a neat continuation of some of the things we've been discussing here as well. Peter, I'm gonna let you kind of have the final word here. As you're speaking to the trainees, you gave a great admonition as related to bringing your faith into the clinic room and with the patient. But I didn't mention this because we've been kind of working through your bio. But Peter, you served as not just a local leader and the work that you were doing at Wright State, but you were a national student leader, a national resident leader. And I'm gonna toot your horn here and say, if you've ever experienced the VIE poster session, that was your brainchild. That was something you and the team around you were able to push forward and has now been an integral part of our national convention, a great vehicle for students and residents to be able to attend, even get a stipend, whatever. And it's been just a big boost. So thank you for your years of leadership. And now as a leader, one has been involved in CMDA. I figure you could speak well to this. I assume that listeners are some way involved in CMDA, but encourage them. Why has CMDA been important to you as a physician, but also as a trainee? Why were those years important to be involved with CMDA?
There's no better group that's out there that's going to allow you to cultivate not only your faith, but what it looks like to be a Christian who happens to be in medical practice. And more time than ever, starting as a medical student, a dental student, working your way through all of your training, if it's going to get incorporated in, if you're going to go the length to want to see that be a part of a staple of who you are, you need to start as early as possible, because to have the mindset that you're going to have more time to figure this out later, or that you're going to develop these habits once you're done with training, or you're worried about somebody like an attending or a fellow looking over your shoulder as a student or anything else, it's not going to happen. Or it's going to happen, it's going to be much more difficult. And so it was very important for me to really establish that on an early level and an early phase, and then to be able to continuously be around other Christians that were either in a similar plane as far as where we were going at the same pace at the same time and got to run that race together, or to have people that were ahead that we could sit down and talk to and have conversations and have mentor relationships that developed organically. It's the bigger meeting that happened across the country, or even some of those that were more local. And to have some of those people that are still people that I call on, that I get to have coffee with, that have been support during really tough, dark times, both from a professional or a personal situation, that have been supports to myself and my wife, all of that happened because of CMDA. And so to have that as a resource, to be able to be a part of that, and to see and understand that, yes, can you get a lot of great things out of your local church? Absolutely. And as Jerry and Bill can tell you, I am a big proponent of my local church and very thankful to be a member of Red Rocks and to be on Red Rocks worship and all that kind of stuff. But there are things that you can't get in that same setting that God has specifically called us to. And had you talked to me as a student, I think I was a lot more into the idea that the mission field that I needed to be called to was like everybody else's, and that had to incorporate a plane or a train or a bus or a boat. And along the way, I realized that my mission field is 12 minutes away, and it's a big academic campus filled with some really amazing minds and bright people that are walking halls in a very dark way and desperately need Jesus. And so to remember and be able to incorporate the things that I was able to learn and the questions I was able to ask and the safe space that I was able to be in to talk about so many different topics, and then to be able to walk in confidently into those places and remember and know that this is somewhere that God's called me, and to have the opportunity and say, okay, if I know that God's called me, then what has he called me for and how do I be obedient? And part of that's with patience, part of that's with colleagues, part of that gets to be with trainees. And it's amazing to kind of see how God doesn't fail to provide opportunities. And I know I'm not perfect, and I can think of some that I blew past that I wish I hadn't, or some that I had to go back to pick up and try and find an opportunity to go back and take a moment of prayer because I was trying to be more focused on efficiency or getting home in time or trying to get to X, Y, and Z thing, and to remember that these were God-ordained moments that he put before me, and trying to always keep my mind attuned to what could God be doing and how could I be a part of that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both. Thank you for being a part, Jerry, Peter, for this great conversation. And I know it's going to be an encouragement to all who listen. So thank you both for being on this episode of CMDA Student Pulse Podcast. And for our listeners and watchers, we'll see you soon. Bye.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is non-partisan and does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse Podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.